Accessing library computer data.
And to make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Penske Podcast. You haven't tuned in before. This is a podcast where we are running through all 178 episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, giving our thoughts and feelings about each and every one. And right now we're up to episode 9 of season 7. It's called Force of Nature. Directed by Robert Letterman, written by Naren Shankar, and it aired back on October 15th, 1993. In this episode, a pair of sibling scientists show that warp drive propulsion is harming the very fabric of space. A subplot involves Data attempting to train his cat, Spot. That's what it is, Force of Nature. And Joe is back again, and me and Joe, right after this break, are going to go deep on the episode that some say brought about the public shift in awareness of climate change, and some people don't say that at all. Anyway, Force of Nature, right after this.
You have made a very serious accusation. I want you to explain it.
Captain, according to our research, warp fields cause a dangerous reaction in this region of space.
Our planet is already being affected. We have measured large gravitational shifts throughout our system.
If something isn't done, our planet will become uninhabitable.
Captain, I've heard this theory before. Their research was evaluated by the Federation Science Council a few years ago. Quite frankly, it didn't hold up.
That research was only preliminary. Our original analysis was incomplete.
If you wanted us to review your research, you should have made a request through the Science Council.
Their resources are limited. It would have taken over a year before they dispatched a science ship to come and evaluate our work.
We were not willing to wait any longer. We knew that if we disabled enough ships, Starfleet would come. Then at least we would be able to present our case.
That's how you rationalized these attacks?
Neither you nor the Ferengi suffered any casualties, Commander. The actual damage to your vessels was negligible.
We dispersed Verderon probes in the corridor merely to disable warp-driven ships. Nothing more.
You can call it whatever you like. The fact remains you deliberately disguised your probes. You made them look like signal markers. You hid them in the debris field. You mined the corridor.
Hey, Joe. Welcome back.
Hey, Wes.
I have some brochures and reading material I'd like to give you about climate change. I'd like to just give it to you, and you have to absorb it and just start believing it and everything like that. Not that climate change isn't real, people, but let's talk about Force of Nature, I guess, which is a fascinating episode of Star Trek, in my opinion.
It is certainly extremely heavy-handed, yes.
apparently the writers went away to, they were invited to like a lunch thing with like an environmental agency. And I don't know if this is like lobbyists trying to sort of, you know, push themselves into Hollywood products, but they came out of it with this episode. And I think, if I'm reading this correctly, I have to assume that this is a writer's revolt against being forced to do a message episode. They're like, let's just make the shittiest episode possible, because my boss made me write a message episode into. And not like Star Trek is not all about message episodes, but one that's so clearly after school specially like this. Like, I haven't seen the show try to do this since that horrible drug episode with Symbiosis, which was actually a good episode in the first season. But they haven't done anything like this, and it's just kind of shocking. What did you think in general here?
Well, I got to ask you, Wes, why would anyone do drugs?
Drugs are bad, Wesley Crusher. Get the fuck out of here.
Man, even when I first saw this, I remember seeing this when I was 11 years old and also kind of picking up on that and also realizing that that warp speed barrier is not going to go anywhere because it would break the show.
Yes, not just the show. It breaks the series. This is something...
Right.
This is a monumental idea that is just sort of glibly agreed to and then forgotten. It's almost worse than the Crusher Picard episode attached to the ending that we just talked about a couple days ago.
This is the same idea where they have a huge implication of something and they just throw it away at the end. It doesn't. This is never brought up again whatsoever.
Well, I hear that the reason that Voyager's nacelles rise is to prevent this sort of damage. which I guess there are. There are more egregious suspensions of disbelief in Trek, but yeah, it's a pretty bad one.
it's so dumb, and it just sort of sticks out as something that's like, well, they can't possibly continue this. Like this can't go on. They do cleverly, not even cleverly. They get around it by making the Voyagers, as you said, then the cells move up and down, and that kind of fixes the problem, apparently, somehow. If only, you know, fossil fuel burning was such an easy solution. You just have to make the furnaces go up and down or something. But
well, yeah, you know, you get new motor mounts and
the whole
damn thing is just...
Just get some higher octane fuel going into that bed and you'll be all set. No, it's... I think outside of the message thing, I think this episode is just a fucking... a narrative mess. It's like... It's so poorly structured that it's awkward at points. Like... I wrote down Data and Geordi have 5 minutes of bad comedy in the Jeffries tube, where they're just like they're crawling around making stupid jokes about the cat, and the cat has like 17 minutes of screen time in this episode, and it doesn't matter. And none of that stuff that Geordi and Data are talking about at the beginning of the episode has any impact on what goes on later on.
Well, confessionally, I kind of like that. You know, it's the Geordi-Data relationship. It's fun. They're
buddies.
You know, they're buddies, you know.
I mean, I do feel bad. Maybe I'm hypocritical. I've been saying we want more character moments, but...
Oh, well, there you go.
I need my character moments to be tethered somehow to what's going on in the episode. We don't meet the aliens in this one until about halfway through.
Was it that far along? It feels like it was that far along.
Every TNG episode,
no
TNG episode has the time. If the idea is good, the idea of what the driving incident is can't come in past the cold open. You know what I mean? Like,
the cold open
needs to set the stage for what the problem is. And this one does. I don't even remember what the cold open is in this episode.
I have that in my notes. I think it's the...
The cat?
I think it's the damn cat.
Is it Geordi trying to catch the cat? Is that the cold open? I can't remember whatsoever. I mean, that's kind of my point, is that it's so terrible you don't even bother remembering it.
Yeah, it's the fucking cat. I mean, but I can relate to an untrained cat. I've had untrained animals. But yeah, it's the fucking cat, man.
So, I mean, I wrote down, this episode is just wasting time. There's so much cat. Picard gives the engineer team to the... The whole thing with the Ferengi doesn't go anywhere. You know,
it really doesn't. It doesn't go anywhere.
And we're treated to apparently Picard showing his diplomatic prowess by giving the Ferengi everything, like giving him something that everyone knows that he needs, and the Ferengi being like, "Well, maybe I'll tell you when I last." It's like it's so obvious that it's not clever, and it's like insulting to the audience. And then this Ferengi ship tells them that they saw the what was the name? The Intrepid, right? No, it's not the Intrepid.
No, it was the...
Ferguson or something?
No, 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 no. It was F. It started with an F. The
Finnegan. I can't remember.
Go with the Finnegan. It was...
I can look it up as I'm going along. But anyway, he shows them that this ship is going off somewhere. And then we have another 10 minutes of Geordi competing with the engineer from the Intrepid.
Right. It was the Fleming.
The Fleming. I knew it was something vaguely Irish. Yeah. Right. So the Geordi has this thing with the Intrepid. None of those storylines have anything to do with the plot of the episode. And it takes up about 15 minutes of the show at the start.
Yeah, to be honest with you, when I was watching this, they were talking about that when the rift opened. It's like, we're going in to get the Fleming. I'm like, wait, what the fuck? The Fleming's in there?
Yes,
I thought
that the Fleming blew up. What was that debris field? And I don't realize, I must have just passed into a coma or something, because I don't remember the Fleming ever being realized that it still existed and how they found it in the first place.
Yeah, I'm glad you feel the same way, because I thought I missed something. I'm like, am I not paying enough attention or something? Where is the – how did the Fleming get inside that rift?
And also the show never shows the Fleming, and they never show any of the crew members that are rescued. So it's like the
show
doesn't exist in the episode.
It's like all of those people in Generations that were going to be saved when we prevent the sun from blowing up that we never see.
Right. Yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah, that's a very good point. No.
Also, I don't understand. This episode just sucks. Like, I understand that this is kind of a one that everyone kind of piles on, but I think it goes beyond the. I can deal with like a metaphor of global warming type thing, you know, especially in the early 90s. Even though they've already had the episode with the one where Wesley Crusher gets kidnapped in the first season, which is a ham-fisted allegory for global warming.
Which one did he get kidnapped in? That was
when the bow breaks.
Right, the Aldeans.
Yes,
was that the Aldeans?
They're sterile because of the loss of their atmosphere due to like carbon monoxide.
They're cloaking. Their cloaking shield
caused them to be sterile, which is basically a metaphor for global warming. And this, they bring it up again here. I can deal with this. I can accept the fact that this is a global warming episode. I'm going to watch it. I sound like I'm like against global warming understanding or something, but it's really just the fact that it's such a obvious metaphor that it's kind of offensive as an episode.
Yeah, even as a kid, I saw it as being a bit ham-fisted. It's extraordinarily ham-fisted.
It has this message to get across.
Right.
And it sets up this narrative that makes no sense the entire way that it's going through. Like, we've talked about the 15 minutes of nonsense that starts off the episode. It pulls the thing from the chase, not the chase. What's the one with the metaphasic shielding?
That would be with the Ferengi scientist. Suspicions.
Yeah, suspicions. Yeah. So it does the suspicions thing of why the fuck does the scientist need to die? Why doesn't she just send an exploding ship out into this area and blow it up and cause this? She doesn't need to be on the ship. There's no reason to be on the ship. And then they compound this. Sorry, I'm just going off on a rant here, but
rant away.
They compound it by Data and Geordi later have a conversation where they're like, her methods were unorthodox, and like, you know, she went too far in proving what the problem was. And it's like, you guys think that warp engines have no problems. What would have been the downside of allowing someone to blow up? You know, you clear the area and you blow, cause a warp core breach or something. You know what I mean? Why do they think she went too far when it seems perfectly reasonable to me that this would be one of the things that they would try to do in the first place?
Well, I think because like my thought on it was that this is like, to go back to the global warming analogy, like if you were to release so many amazing amounts of tons of methane into the atmosphere just to demonstrate that the Earth will warm,
right,
you're compounding the problem. Which was what my problem was that she just went out there, compounded the problem because things weren't moving fast enough. But it's like, dude, you just gave yourself less time. You did the exact same thing in the opposite direction.
I guess I can appreciate that interpretation. I would disagree only because of the vastness of space. Like, it doesn't make sense to me that this is really that big of a problem because they can just avoid this area. You know, like...
Right. Also, yeah. Is it all of space? That's
it is. But apparently, this is only the place being affected because so many ships have to travel through this one area.
Right. That was explained. Okay.
So,
yeah. You're
so
right.
if you have like the infinite amount of space that's going on, and so few ships are all like, I just can't see it being that big of a problem. And the fact that she causes this warp core breach to do it in such a weird area, it seems like you'd just be like, oh, we'll just avoid this area going forward. I still think my point of if they think that warp core or warp energy doesn't have an effect on anything, then doing a warp core breach in the middle of nowhere should have no impact on anything, right? Like, they should be like, that's fine. Just do it.
Well, I mean, if it's... Well, if you know Star Trek, you know there's a warp core breach every other damn week. Like, I mean, cause and effect had four of them, like right there.
You'd think that this would have
studied phenomena. Yeah,
exactly. It's just I feel like it's all these problems just piling up on each other, and they don't end up resolving in any sort of way. And it's like the height of fake drama at the end here, where it's all technobabble. And me and Clay have talked before about there's nothing this show does worse when we're told that disaster is imminent and there's a character like counting down. It is it's so terrible. It's the worst kind of drama that the show can do, and they do it for the end of the year. And I also don't understand, right? The Fleming is in the breach, right? Or explain this to me. The Fleming is
in the rift. The rift. Right. Yeah.
So the Enterprise is like, we'll shoot in at warp, we'll coast through, we'll beam them off, and then we'll shoot out the other side.
Exactly. How are you going to get inertia without a warp field?
But why can't they just use impulse power?
Well, did it say how far away the Fleming was? I mean, the corridor was 12 light years long. It seemed like it was pretty close, but
they did. But it's like say they do the warp thing and they shoot in there and they're like, oh, now we can't get out. You can get out. Just use your impulse engines. You know what I mean? It's not like they weren't even losing power in the rift, which is like the other fallback that the show always does when they're in some kind of rift.
Yeah.
And like, oh, the ship is running out of power. They seem to have no negative repercussions when they were in the rift.
Yeah, now that you mention it, that's true.
Nothing was going wrong. They were just like, now we can't get out. And it's like, you can't get out. Just don't use your warp engines. Use the impulse. Maybe it'll take a week, but you'll still get out. You know what I mean?
What the hell were they doing in that rift? What was that rift?
I don't. The Fleming was in there. They had to save the day. I think.
Yeah, the Fleming was in there or something. Yes, it's very much a ham-fisted global warming metaphor that is the entire point of the episode.
So I've ranted enough. Why don't you tell me what you thought? I think our pre-taping conversation, you seemed a little bit maybe more positive on it. I don't know. What did you think in general?
Well, this is one I actually remember from when I was younger, and I remember thinking, well, that speed limit's never going to go anywhere, obviously. And the thing is, it's not a great episode, but it's not a terrible issue to explore. I think maybe if they had tempered themselves down a little bit of what they were trying to do, then maybe a good episode could have come out of it instead of just ramming it down our throats. You know?
Why didn't they tie it to a single planet? You know what I mean? Like, have it... You can have it be a more obvious metaphor. Like, you can even have it be global warming on an alien planet. And it would feel like it would make more sense to me than what they actually do here with the warp energy wearing a hole in the carpet of space, and eventually you're just going to blow up.
Yeah, I got to ask you, Wes, what's the most busy planet in the Federation?
I would hope it's Earth. I would think it would be Earth.
Right? Yeah. So I just thought of that. Wouldn't Earth be the one that's wearing out the carpet of warp energy
so.
Space? You would think so.
Yeah, they have a lot of graduates coming in to attend Starfleet Academy.
Yeah, what I wrote. Let me look this. When I first watched this on the viewing party, what I wrote at the end was, it tries to scream something in your face, but isn't at all confident in what it has to say.
Yeah,
and that's how I feel about the episode. It's. Yeah, it seems like it could have gone through a few more revisions.
I think they could have stuck an actual story onto it, because there's honestly no story here. There's no narrative thread that ties all of this together. It's really just sort of like a series of vignettes that happen until eventually it just wraps up. And it wraps up in such a weird way where, you know, Starfleet is not going to study this or anything. They just sort of give this edict that you can't go over warp 5.
Right.
And everyone else is like, well, maybe the Klingons will obey this, but the Romulans certainly won't, and the Cardassians won't. And it's like, well, all right. That to me makes the most sense as a sort of metaphor for global warming, as you're talking about various countries or whatever. But it feels so hasty for such a big, broad implication in this universe.
Yeah, and plus on top of that, where is the space located? Whose jurisdiction is this? Is this Federation space?
Yeah, I think so. Although that's always very hazy, right? Whatever.
Yeah, it's very hazy like that because, I mean, when you're dealing with actual countries polluting the air, obviously the air is...
Everybody's.
Maybe that works. Because they're polluting the air in their own land, but it does go everywhere, so I guess it could be seen as a metaphor for that. There we go, overanalyzing it again.
there's no such thing as an overanalysis for this type of stuff. My notes are disparate, just like this sort of episode is, but I think this episode has the most sort of the actors pretending to be rocking on the ship. I really noticed it. There's a ton of it going on in this episode.
I noticed exactly that. And in fact, I wrote in my notes that one of the scenes is like the straight up TNG, like stabilized Star Trek scene. Where Riker's in his chair and he's reaching beneath the chair and it's rocking back and forth. Yeah, that's like the straight up stabilized Star Trek scene from that you see in every YouTube video that tries to take advantage of that concept.
Yeah, there's the... mother was that father brother mother brother that band where they have the GIF that just keeps playing as the ship is rocking, and it's that mother father band, whatever the hell they were from the early 2000s.
I was thinking of the one where they had like the acid drive. Yeah, where it's like they were testing the acid drive and it was basically LSD, so age meant everything went to YouTube it, guys.
we'll put a link in there, and I'll try not to forget about it this time, actually. But it's just such a... I think this episode is just so stupid. It's such a season 7, like epitome of season 7 type thing going on here. Tell me one reason why I'm wrong about this episode being bad. I'm not saying that as a challenge, but maybe I'm just being overly harsh on it.
No, you're not being overly harsh. It's serviceable. It is a serviceable concept. I feel that the script could have gone through a few more rewrites. I like the idea of warp drive damaging space and for them having to do something about it. But to make it so ham-fisted was just, it was too much. Okay, it's like if you were to go into a store and there's someone there soliciting about a political cause that you believe in, mm-hmm. and they come on too strong and it's like, yo, back up.
Right.
You know what I mean? It just comes on too strong. That's all. It's a perfectly serviceable concept.
I'd agree that I think that the warp damaging space kind of makes sense to me. They'd have a hard time sort of writing it in such a way that it wasn't fundamentally crippling to what the series is about. Like, I was thinking they could have just done... I would be more interested in an episode that a... Like what they bring up in this one, like the planet that the scientists are from is apparently isolated, so that they need warp drive to be able to interact with like the rest of the galaxy.
Which is a good concept. That is a good concept.
I feel like the episode could have focused on a planet that was willing to give up warp drive for some reason and what the repercussions would be. That's the more interesting story to me than what they give us here.
Yeah, but also, well, I guess it's just looking at the little guy's perspective because, I mean, if you're out in the middle of nowhere and you can't use your boat anymore, if you're on an island and you can't use your boat anymore, I mean, you're basically screwed. So I guess they were just trying to, drive it on home as hard as they possibly could, right?
Yes, that's, I think that's a fitting description of what this episode actually does. But anyway, we're going to wrap it up there. I don't think it's a great episode to really discuss or much more than what it is. I think we're both sort of just like of the opinion that that's an episode that happened. I'm going to play a clip, a terrible clip from this episode, and we are going to be back, Joe and I, with our final thoughts and ratings for Force of Nature.
We've received new directives from the Federation Council on this matter. Until we can find a way to counteract the warp field effect, the Council feels our best course is to slow the damage as much as possible. Therefore, areas of space found susceptible to warp fields will be restricted to essential travel only, and effective immediately, all Federation vessels will be limited to a speed of Warp 5, except in cases of extreme emergency.
Well, the Klingons will observe these restrictions, but the Romulans will not.
And what about the Ferengi? And the Cardassians, for that matter?
The Federation's sharing all our data with warp-capable species. We can only hope that they realize it's in their own interests and take similar action.
Putting limits on warp speed is only going to prevent other rifts from forming. What are we going to do about this one?
Unfortunately, right now, there's not much we can do.
The gravitational shifts have already begun to affect my planet's orbit. Our climate is changing.
The Federation is setting up a weather control matrix on Hakaris, too. It's only a temporary solution, but it should suffice for now.
We're lucky the rift took place as far away from the planet as it did. It gives us some time to consider our options.
If there are no more questions, you're all dismissed.
All right, Joe, welcome back. We're going to give final thoughts and ratings for Force of Nature, which was an episode of Star Trek that I think was pretty terrible. Why don't you go first? Give us your thoughts on a scale 1 to 5, 1 being true trash, 5 being a fantastic episode, 3 being an average episode of Star Trek. Where do you think this one falls? And guys, before you give your rating, you guys are on YouTube. You can click in the upper right-hand corner of the video. There's a little gray circle. It'll give you a poll option, and you can vote on what you thought you would rate this one. Anyway, go ahead.
I'm going to give this one a 5. No, I'm kidding. it's obviously a 2. It's not as bad as something like Up the Long Ladder or Shades of Grey or Sub Rosa you haven't covered yet. But it's it's just so unpolished. They were sending a message that they just didn't do a very good job putting it together.
Yeah. I think I'm right about this is the writers just basically giving the finger to that environmental group who probably served them something like vegan omelets or something when they went to go to the front.
Oh, God. It was like that it's like that restaurant in Grandma's Boy that Mr. Cheezel picked out with the shot of the wheatgrass.
It's good, healthy stuff. I'm going to give this one a 1. And I think it's an unsavable episode as it currently stands. Like, you could do a lot of work to fix it, but at some point you're rewriting the entire episode. And I think this one's a 1 because it has terrible structure. Just going on how long it takes to get the thing going, why I'm supposed to care about these people, how the impact of what they're talking about is going to affect the Federation. And then at the end, they just throw it away and say, well, you're never going to have to worry about that again. That was good. It's a total waste of time and a total waste of an idea and a waste of basically everyone's energy into throwing this thing together. And it's just such an obvious message episode that totally misses the mark. And it doesn't make me think about the implications of climate change or global warming at all. You know what I mean? It's like, is that the whole point of this? Why did this happen?
Yeah. Cause you gotta be thinking about it to realize, well, I mean, it's so ham-fisted, but it's like, it's, the average viewer might not even decode that. Just like, oh, warp drive caused this. But, you know, if someone's looking at it over 25 years, oh, climate change, of course.
Yes. Yeah. I wonder how obvious it would have been back then. I guess that's a good point because they don't outright, like, Picard doesn't end the episode by saying, like, oh, just like climate change back on 21st century Earth. You know what I mean?
Yeah. From a late 20th century Earth perspective of a little kid filtered through a quarter of a century of memories. No, I don't think the message really came through. I knew that it was trying to send some sort of a message about current issues. Maybe I thought it was the ozone layer or something, but mostly what I remember was, wow, they're never going to respect that rule.
Yeah. Well, they came up with the twisty engines and it all worked out there. Anyway, Joe, why don't you plug the Star Trek viewing party?
All right, well, everybody, check out StarTrekViewingParty.reddit.com. We're going through DS9 right now. We're up to the beginning of Season 2. It's starting to get good, and we're having a real good time there with about 1,500 people. It's gotten a lot bigger than it was a few months ago. So check it out. You got nothing to lose.
Yeah, it's the part of the internet that is so trodden that it's worn out much like a carpet, and eventually it's going to blow up into a rift or something like that.
Oh, God, I'll tell you, we were worried about it in August there when we got like 150 in one day. That was very exciting.
It's, Yeah, it's they discussed this episode, obviously, and they are continuing on with Deep Space Nine. They're a little bit ahead of what this podcast is doing. But yeah, good group of people over there. Some thoughtful ideas and thoughtful conversations. And obviously some nice back and forth about what people think about this whole series and everything like that, the Star Trek in general. And guys, thank you very much for listening. If you enjoyed the content, you're on YouTube, like in the comments. Appreciate it. If you're on iTunes, a rating or review helps get the show out there. Rate us on all the podcatchers that you listen to. You can also go to Facebook.com/ThePenskePodcast and leave a like and a comment there. And Patreon, Patreon.com/ThePenskePodcast. For a couple of dollars a month, you get exclusive content. You get podcasts. We talk about movies, talk about TV shows. Doesn't really always relate to Trek, but if you like the show and you like hearing us talk about it, you can go there to Patreon.com/ThePenskePodcast. Give a couple bucks and you get extra podcasts. I appreciate it very much, guys. Everyone on Patreon, it's very much appreciated. Helps cover the running expenses of the show. You've been fantastic. People seem to like the extra content, and I enjoy giving out those extra podcasts. It's a lot of fun. Joe, good talking to you about Force of Nature.
It's great talking to you, Wes.
Thank you very much for coming on the show. Season 7, TNG's wrapping up. Do you have any final thoughts on TNG before we fade away into the distance here?
Oh, well, yeah, of course.
Still your favorite?
Oh, of course. Oh, by far. Yeah. Well, if anyone's read my review of All Good Things on our Star Trek viewing party, you would know that, yeah, it's my favorite. It's a very comforting show to me, and it always has been for over a quarter of a century. My dad got me into it back then, and still to this day, I can just pick it up and watch it.
Yes, it's my Star Trek series. I think it's fairly inarguable that Deep Space Nine is better, but this is the one that I always come back to. It's a comfort food. It's a comfort food of a TV show.
Exactly how I feel. And we'll see if Deep Space Nine is better, but it's going to be very difficult for me to feel pretty much that anything is better than TNG.
So you, in the previous episode, you mentioned that Season 6 is your favorite episode, your favorite season, rather. What's your least favorite season?
One is grabbing at the low fruit.
It is.
So is two.
But sometimes that's true. Sometimes the low fruit is the lowest and it must be grabbed, right?
Well, they are. But since it generally goes for everyone that one is the worst and two is the second worst, I would say that four is probably the one of the latter seasons that didn't go as well as the rest of them.
That's been one of the biggest surprises to me, is that season four is a noticeable decrease in quality from three to six.
Yeah, there's not as many just classic, wonderful episodes. I mean, when you got three, you've got Yesterday's Enterprise and of course, the whole Best of Both Worlds thing. And I guess I have to count part two as part of season three. I always did.
Sarek's in season three, Yesterday's Enterprise.
Sarek's in season three. Yep. Yeah. But four, there's not that many. But then you get to five and you have things like Cause and Effect, for instance, that are just fantastic. So yeah, season four would be the lull to me. How about you?
My favorite is, I have to temper this. It's very close between three and six. Six is the overall, the most consistent season, most consistent quality.
It is.
Although three is the season with the most highlights in it. Although season three also had some very bad episodes in it, which season six doesn't really have that.
Right.
It has a few bad ones, but nothing as bad as some of the worst of season three. So it depends on what you're looking for. If you're looking for the most consistent season, it's six. If you're looking for the season with the most TNG-ish sort of episodes, I'd say it's season three.
That makes sense to me. Yeah, season three did have a few bad ones with Lloyd Braun and the Ferengi, and then
Matter of Perspective, I always think, is a huge letdown and stuff like that. That's in season three. Yeah.
That was a Matter of Perspective. Rashomon in Space?
Yes, Rashomon in Space.
Right. Yeah, that one could have been a lot better. A lot better.
Anyway, guys, we're going to have a lot more thoughts about this when I wrap up the season and the series, actually, with that. So look forward to that. Joe, thank you again for coming on.
Anytime, Wes.
Yes, I will see you.